your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. You got a joke for us, Ryan? All right.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. All right, stop me if you heard it. All right.
Stop.
So this guy walks into a bar and he orders a shot of whiskey. And the bartender gives it to him, and he pushes it to the side, and then he orders another shot of whiskey. Bartender gives it to him, he drinks it. After 10 more shots of whiskey, bartender's like, "Sir, excuse me, was there something wrong with that first shot of whiskey? You didn't drink it." And the guy's like, "Well, I've been going to AA meetings, and they told me if I can just avoid the first drink, everything will be okay."
I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Jeff. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that will or might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. And once we turn down the lights, we'll get started. If you don't know it, you can follow along up here, or you can repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There's the solution from the big book, page 17. the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who have who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Erica to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problem in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. And this is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane, meeting mode, or just turn them off. So I wasn't originally supposed to be up here tonight, and I got called like a couple minutes before I was showing up to set up. And it just made me grateful to be able to be there. You know, this program and God have allowed me to pick up that phone and someone asked for something, and it's just like, okay, I'll be there, whatever you need. I think that's like one hugely important thing that I've acquired over this process, and I'm just grateful for that. And that's all I get to say right now. Help me introduce Peter.
Sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank the group for having me here and continue to talk about my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous going through this work. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. I'm very grateful for that day. It has set me on a path, a course, a direction, which I had not even dreamed about. It was unfathomable when I was a kid growing up to live this type of life. But in order to get there, many things had to happen to me after getting drunk and after continuing to get drunk and after bottoming out. There was a whole course of action that needed to take place before I was able to get traction in here. And earlier today, I don't know why, early this morning, I should say, I was up, Lord, it was 5 and something this morning, like I usually am, and doing some meditation and some prayer and my usual routine in the morning, which consist of reading usually when I'm done with prayer meditation, if I'm so moved. And I'm reading some stuff, and I don't know where I get this thing. And I was thinking of the seventh grade, what it was like for me in the seventh grade. And I know why this came to me. And the condition in my home with my mom, you know, in another psych ward and another suicide attempt. And I remember sitting in the classroom, and I remember the English teacher being stern with me about not doing assignments and how I was much smarter than what I was showing and needed, got to give an effort. And I didn't really care. And it wasn't that I wasn't interested in school or wasn't capable of being good in school. I just lost all kind of lust, any kind of for life, any kind of excitement for life, because there was so much trouble home. And what came to me, how lost I really was at 12 years old. And I think of a 12-year-old kid right now, they should have the world in their palm of their hands and excited about just goofy things you do when you're 12. And at 12 years old, I was completely lost. And I was playing music. I was a gifted musician, playing with guys who were much older than me. And I was sought after. And there were great hopes for my from the skill that God gave me. But I remember just feeling so lost on the inside and so broken at that age. And with very little hope, because I knew as a matter of time, Mom was going to die. And I was going to be stuck with this guy that I called Dad. And it was just this thing came over me on where I was and where I got to now. And where I got to now is nothing on my part. I did nothing to get here 29 years sober to give a talk to AA, to give a talk to you guys and share my experience, strength, and hope as if I earned it, as if I owned it, as if I worked hard for it. And what had to happen to me was the beginning, when it started June 23rd, 1988, my separation from alcohol, where God showed up in my life and I got rescued or surrendered, where God showed up and the software that was put in this computer was changed. And for the very first time, I think I talked about this last week, that I heard a different voice. And I've shared many times, it sounded like me, but then again, it didn't. And I was hearing something different, new information. And the pilot light got turned on even just a little bit. And there was a shift that was happening to me, and I didn't even know it. In fact, I was very afraid of it. And what can happen to many of us when we're along this path and we're sober 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and we have these God moments where God shows up right in our life, many of us will even recoil because this is something new again. It's a new dimension I'm about to cross over into, the world of the Spirit. And some of us will just embrace it. But our humanness and our flawed character will show up sometimes when we meet this God. And for me, in June of 88, when I heard this different information, and there was a feeling of desperation, I need to do something to save my life now. I was also very frightened because I didn't recognize this information and this voice. And it was the beginning of this new life. Now, very often we'll say how we worked hard and you know, how we've done our step work. And I quite frankly just screwed up my life so terribly and infected so many people with my alcoholism that anyone else, any other civilian who didn't know about AA would continue lingering that way and then die. And yet in Alcoholics Anonymous, I screw up and my reward is salvation. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. My reward is forgiveness. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. So I get salvation. I get redemption. Then I do the work. I don't do the work to get redemption. I don't do the work to get salvation. It doesn't work that way. I had to meet the end. I had to run out of road where I was completely out of options, where there was absolutely nothing left. Drink and die. Don't drink. I feel like I'm going to die. Where I knew treatment wasn't working. I knew AA didn't work. I knew my religious community. I knew nothing worked. What do I do now? I was leaning over the cliff, holding on for dear life. And that's when I begged. And I want to continue to be a beggar in God's kingdom. Not that my 29 years has me good to go and I don't have to do the things I did to get here. But it came with that moment of clarity, that gift of desperation. And in that salvation, I'm able to do step work. I'm able to get endurance, courage, strength, and direction to continue even facing adversity. And we've faced, anyone's been around here a while, know about adversity and recovery. Sometimes we just feel like we're involved in a drive-by shooting and going to work and stuff happens. The phone call, you know, someone died, someone's sick, a sponsee relapsed, sponsee took their life. She's leaving, he's leaving, no money, no job. It goes on and on and on. The adversities that I've experienced and many of us in this room have experienced in recovery. And yet we come in here and say, my life is joyous, happy, and free. Because it is. Because many times in those moments, that tumultuous times, and we'll get them. If you're around here a while, you will get them. You come home and says, honey, I'm leaving you. Well, how did this happen? Or the boss says, thanks for everything, but you're out. Things like that. Or some of us who have children, we find out our kids are using drugs and can't get off. Oh my God, how did this happen? There's something that goes on when we are spiritually fit. We get saved on our day of our last drink, and that gives us, that's the catalyst for us to do something. And little by slowly, we start getting traction in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's way more than going to meetings. It's doing the work in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and then giving it all away. That there's an undercurrent that meets this adversity. The calamity is met with serenity. And I don't mean we're chanting and oming after we just lost our job or he or she just walked out. There's just a stillness deep down in that somehow, some way, we just know, because this has happened to me many times. I don't know how and I don't know when, but I know I'm going to get through this. I'm going to be okay. I don't have a clue. That's godliness. And when we're new, we can't see that. We need the elders to tell us, I've been through that, and this is how you get out. I've gone through things like that. It's the sacredness of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's not going to happen to me. My experience has been by just showing up at an AA meeting right before the speaker and taking off soon as he or she's done. It's about being in the middle of this thing. Which means I need to be really desperate. I need to want recovery more than anything in the world. And it isn't because I'm that bright, I'm that insightful, I just don't want to die anymore. And we can die while we're sober. And not the death of self, which the big book is going to allow us to experience, but literally die while we're in here, little by slowly. In and out, over and over and over and over, and the bottoms get deeper and worse, and the consequences are overwhelming. And there is no panacea, because I've crossed over another line, the point of no return. I'm damaged now. No matter what you throw at me, I just can't grasp it anymore. And I live with a feeling of impending doom and hopelessness. Thank the good Lord that didn't happen to me. But after June of 88, I was running around in AA like a lunatic, completely untreated. And God gave me another bottom December 22nd, 1988. Where I got thirsty again. And my shoulders got a little bit too much of a swagger in them. Because I was coming up on 6 months tomorrow. It was December 22nd, 1980. I thought I was a big shot. I wasn't listening to the elders with 20 and 30 and 40 years who had been in the middle of all of this. And the ego started to reemerge. Thibaut talks about this, the reconstruction of the ego, easing God out. And I start to think, I'm keeping me sober. Very, very deep water. Very dangerous. I've worked hard for my recovery. How did I possibly work hard? I worked hard at screwing up. I worked hard at getting another drink. All I did in here was you tell me to do something, I do it. I just follow directions. It's this grace of God and the strength that God gives me to continue writing and continue praying. Because on my own power, I don't have this type of endurance to be here this long, praying every morning, meditating every morning, sponsoring the amount of people I do. It's not in me. I'm an alcoholic. I want a quick fix and I'm out. I'm the type of guy, I read a book, I look for the pictures, read the ending, I'm done. Right? Buy the gyp notes, what are they, crib notes? I got through school, buy the crib, I got it, good. You know, read chapter 2 of Gnosis, the whole chapter? And I bought him out December 1988, and I was petrified. Because there was a bigger part of me that wanted to stay sober. That God's grace. But I wasn't experienced that power which was giving me grace just yet. And what I quickly found out on this path, through the 12 steps, through this path, this journey, this course that God has sent me on, this course, I got out of the old lane into this new lane. It was different. It was new. And I'm listening to different information, your information, for the first time. I'm watching women walk with dignity and not being trashy, what I was used to being around. And men who had integrity and not trying to be gangsters, which I was used to being around. And people were trusting me when I was not trustworthy. And I wanted this more than anything, and I was petrified. And I landed at some gentleman's door, and he set me straight again. And they're grateful for the elders because they didn't care about my feelings. They weren't callous, but if they start getting involved with my feelings, they'd get drunk with me. They saw someone who's bleeding out, and we will bleed from 1,000 cuts rather than one mortal wound. We would just bleed out. That's what was happening to me, and they saw it. And this one gentleman reminded me of exactly where I was. You have 6 months. You're learning how to crawl. You haven't even begun to walk yet. And I got involved in a big book through desperation, through God guidance that attracted me to people like that. And I got further smashed in the book. Lots of times we think, pardon me, going through the book, I'm going to be joyous, happy, and free overnight. Everything's great. Butterflies and rainbows. I'm going to be rich, get the girl, get the guy, drive a new car. Everything's going to be groovy. And it ain't that way. We will hit the desert. And in the early parts of recovery, we will come face to face with our demons. We will come face to face with the manifestations of self and the things that are killing us, especially when you do inventory. We will look at ourselves right in the mirror and say, I do not like this anymore, but that's me. And the problems, my troubles, my unmanageability of my own making, no one else's. Perceptions of situations are what always cause me pain and trouble. Perceptions of situations made me prideful to seek vengeance. An ego to blame you. And what this work allowed me to do is go in and take stock of me, starting from the beginning. I'm an alcoholic. What does that mean? What does it mean to be an alcoholic once I put down the drink? Am I still alcoholic? Absolutely. In fact, I'm more dangerous now than drinking. And how the hell do I get out of this thing? And the ego had to get crushed even further. And the self-reliance had to go. And pridefulness had to go. And that doesn't feel good. That medicine does not taste good, but it's necessary. It's a vital ingredient. And only desperation that God gave me when he rescued me and surrendered me allowed me to put one foot in front of the other and chop wood and carry water. That chopping wood and carrying water is not doing this in front of a bunch of folks. It's not leading a Lord's Prayer, reading secretary notes, or what I think is the most important commitment any meeting is standing by the door for me. It's none of that. It's going into your room all alone and doing step work. It's going into your room all alone when no one's looking and praying and meditating. It's going into your church community and visiting that when no one's around. It's going to pick up the drunk who's reeking of alcohol and got sick on himself in some flea bag motel with no applause and no light on, you just doing it because that's what we do. It's the plowing of the field when no one's around. But we do it for God's glory because we can't do anything else but that. And you become exhausted and tired and you have calluses on your hand and no one's going, great job. Because when we're spiritually fit, we don't need anyone to go, great job. It's just what we do. We serve. And then every once in a while, we get called to the podium and talk about it. And the great thing is you don't have to make stuff up because you just did it. Many of us are so nervous about speaking because we're worried about what people are going to think of us. I need to sound profound. What am I going to say? And I tell new people, just do you. Share your experience. That's it. If you're attached to what other people think of you, don't even go to the podium. You need to start all over again because the ego is about to do the talk. Chop wood, carry water. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I get this sponsor, this bulldog, really. And I say that with affection, but he was. And the further I got along in the 12 steps, the deeper into step one I got, and the need for power because of my lack of power, my lack of living sober. I had no sober living skills. I had zero. Now, ego wants to say, well, I do a few things good. No, I do nothing good. Let me come to terms with that. I do good if you're watching me because I want to let you think I'm a good guy. When no one's around, I don't do anything. I do nothing good. My music talent, God gave me. Any kind of intelligence I had in school, God gave me. Any kind of athletic skills I had were God-given. And they were all gone. I was in the back of an abandoned building with a bottle of whiskey. That's the best I can come up with. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and almost 6 months, I'm pooping along here and thinking, I'm a little bit better than all of you. This is what I do. I don't really need to be here that much. You know, Whiskey Joe in the back, 40 years, he needs to be, has no life. I got things to do now. And I see new people blowing up all the time because you get 20 minutes sober and you're in love. It'll work. My problem is with me when I'm drinking and not drinking. I'm alcoholic, huh? And I move along in this work, and I start to experience this God they're talking about, a God of my own understanding, and what we can quickly get into. I got into. And we all will at some point. And it's the innocent climb. It'll happen. But I had bells and chimes and sage and candles and music, and I had a three-piece band behind me. I had everything going on in my meditation room, and all this stuff was going on while I'm meditating. And then I sat down with somebody, and they says, you know what, that's all good stuff, but at some point you got to shut it all down, because what I was doing and what we can do is use all that stuff as a distraction not to hear God. I'm paying attention, make sure the sage is burning, make sure the candles are on. Oh my God, I'm so spiritual this morning, if everyone could see me right now. And I'm not listening to God. I'm not hearing anything. And sometimes if we just pulled the plug on all of it and just sit in the prayer and just sit in the meditation, we just might hear information that we really don't want to hear, or instruction or direction that we really don't want to go near. Check in with God. You're good. I'm good. I'm off to work. I'm spiritual. But the deeper we go into prayer, we will face some things that God will deliver when the ground is fertile. It's those little things, simple things. You need to lose weight. You're right, I'm overweight. I'm not taking care of my body. It's a threefold illness. Body badly burned by alcohol. I'm 200 pounds overweight. How spiritual can I be? I got one area of my life that's completely out of line, completely out of integrity. I'm sound asleep in one area of my life. So I'll turn the music on louder so I don't hear it tomorrow. You know, my finances are sideways. I'm sound asleep in that area, pretending to be spiritual. I got a big hole in my recovery life that's out of integrity. I'm sound asleep in this area. I'm married and I'm running around with other women. I got one area in my life completely sound asleep to. I'm out of integrity. How could I be in line with God? But my ego says, you're good. Everything's good. Everything's good. I'm good. You're good. We're good. Don't go there. You don't go there. Everything's good. Ask me to speak. I'll tell you how great I am. And when you shut all this stuff down and stand before our Creator in the raw, we will get things like, what are you doing? You need to start saving money. I mean, God will talk like that too. It's not Moses parting the seas and give me the cure for cancer. It's little simple things. Because if I'm looking for that big boom in prayer and meditation, I'm going to miss the little whispers, the little God winks that God's feeding me constantly. And then I got used to, on this process, just hitting the desert, because I hit the desert many times, where I'm chopping a lot of wood and I'm carrying a lot of water, I'm in the trenches, I'm doing everything, and I can't feel. I can't experience that thing that we look for with God. And instead of bailing, I kept moving forward. And when we get to the other side, the tree is pruned even more. And then I understand it. We live life forward, and we learn it backwards. When I'm going through this tunnel, I say, what is going on? Why this tunnel? Why can't I grasp? Why can't I feel like I have traction? All the while I do. Why is this happening to me, God? Why is this going on? And then when I get to the other side, I look backwards on my life and I see exactly why these things happen. Live it forward, learn it backwards. I make this decision in 3, I write inventory on 4, and you know, the inventory, we talk a lot about inventory, but the value in inventory and the intimate work that inventory allows us to do. Just me, a pen in my hand, a notepad, and my creator, nothing else. And so we write, and off we go. And God writes right through the pen, becomes a spiritual translator. And things are popping on paper that we thought we forgot about. And things make me really uncomfortable when they come to paper. And it's all the shaking up to waking up. And where I was sound asleep, I'm waking up and looking at areas in my life where I point the fingers at others. The book is telling me, take a look at you. That's uncomfortable, but the ego's dying. It's part of the waking up. And I do this inventory, and it's a piece of work. It's not just checking in with the sponsor. There's resentment inventory, there's fear inventory, there's sex inventory. The whole thing is really, if you think about the entire inventory, although it has all these categories, is really about fear, the self-centered fear, and my self-righteous anger, the thread that runs through the whole thing. But Bill knew I wasn't that bright, so he's going to break it up into 3 columns for this guy. You won't get the whole thing. And then they asked me, okay, you got this book, this War and Peace novel called Step 4. Now go give it to someone. Share all those deep, ugly things with someone else. And by the way, they're not going to cast judgment on you, see, I'm right. And they never did. And it's the purging or the cleansing in Step 5. Now, why I'm talking about this is necessary for us, for me, to do this kind of work, to arrive at 6 and 7, to take a look, a clearer look at my grosser handicaps and further submit and surrender to God to tweak it some more, to shave it down and mold it some more before I even attempt to look at Step 8, let alone go out and make amends in Step 9. How could I make Step 9, an amends in Step 9, when I'm still full of pride and ego and self-righteous anger or lust or greed or envy or sloth? When I'm approaching you, or I'm still angry with you for things I think you did to me, it's impossible to pull this off. It's going to blow up. So what the work does is prune me down, shave me down to where it just looks like spirit showing up to your door. So much so that I was able to follow directions in making amends and suiting up and showing up for an appointment to make amends. And that's how I made, when I had an appointment to see someone, I would never go looking like I committed a felony 10 minutes earlier. I didn't go in gym shorts. I didn't go in flip-flops. I didn't go with a baseball hat on. I went dressed because I might be the only copy of the big book that they're going to read. And how do I know someone in their family doesn't need AA and I showing up looking like a vagabond? I said, this is AA? Or, oh, I see with my eyes what AA has done already. What I'm doing speaks so loud, they don't hear a word I'm saying. And so I did this work in 6 and 7. Again, I say I did this work. I was doing the paperwork. I was doing the praying. I was doing the listing and all the surrendering. But it was God who was doing the crafting here. And still broken after all of this work. I'm still flawed. I leak oil. That's me. But that's how God loves me. That's how God made me. In fact, I've said so many times, how we hook into each other is with our brokenness first. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now. I qualify for you. I give you testimony, say, yep, that guy's like me. Or I can get up here, give you a beautiful canned talk on how wonderful thing is and go home. And say, okay, that sounded good, but who is he? We identify in our brokenness. We hook into each other with our brokenness, even if it's Park Avenue, park bench. A few weeks ago, I said, you know, there's times I'm on my knees praying, finished meditation, feeling really put back together, and by the time I get out the door, I committed 20 homicides. And everyone laughed because everyone knows exactly what I'm talking about. The spirituality of imperfection. A group of people who are broken, a room full of broken toys, and I say that with love and respect. We come together. and we accept each other's brokenness with no judgments. And how can we help you with that? Because I'm just as broken as you are, but I've learned how to get past that. And the solution is always God. There's no, you know, Dead Sea Scrolls in the back of the room. Mike Chase didn't have a special poster for people in the back room. Right? It's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which points me to God. So I do this list, and it says, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. All persons made amends to them all. Not the people who are convenient for me to go see, not who I want to go see, but made a list of all people I had harmed. And very often on that list, there were people who showed up on that list that I didn't have a resentment with back in step four. And most of that list came from my fourth step inventory. And some of us write harms caused while we're going through inventory. Some of us don't. I don't. I go back through the list and I start looking at the harms caused. That list, by the way, if I have a list done tonight and I do the work next year, I'll find more people. And that list I have now is not complete. Every time I've gone through the work, the list is ongoing, but this is what God has revealed to me. So I look at my fourth step, and I look at the harms caused and the people I need to go see, and I become willing to make amends to them all. Step nine is going to say, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, this is where the ego gets involved, because I may want to go see her to make amends because I have a motive, and I don't want to go see him to make amends because I'm going to look bad. And I need to make sure the ego is not anywhere in this equation. Thus, we have to work 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And hopefully the ego has been silenced to some degree, maybe grinded into some dust here, so we can go spirit to spirit. And really what I have found in step 9, this is me speaking on my experience, I'm asking for forgiveness. I'm here to make it right. I'm willing to make it right. I'm willing to, you speak to me, anything you need to tell me. What do you need to tell me? What can I do to make it right? I'm offering an olive branch. I recognize what I've done to you. Please forgive me. Hat in hand. Ego won't allow things like that to happen. Pride's not going to let me do things like that. And sometimes when I say, what do you need to tell me? Is there anything you need to tell me? And they lay into me. I need to absorb that and not say, yeah, but you. Yeah, but if you didn't. And I can do that because we now have the armor of God on us. And our intentions are pure to go fix this. The recognition that I harmed you, I stole from you, I hurt you. I'm here to repair this, not just say I'm sorry. The intent is pure. So we're able to literally walk through fire if we had to. If that's what God deemed for us to do. And come out on the other side without a scrape. I haven't heard anyone had to do that yet. But we could. Because we're doing what he sees. Love one another. I've hated you for so long. I was so sick I stole from you. I did all these terrible things. Love one another. Oh my God, that sounds radical. Especially nowadays. But that's what God wanted. And it took all this work for me to do to get to a place of saying, forgive me. I'm sorry. How can I fix this? I don't harbor any bad feelings anymore. And so I make this list. And I will tell you, I was brought up on praying before everything I do. I didn't just write a list. As recent as my last list, there was no just write it out. It was prayer and go in. And when I'm done, give thanks. And so the list, I have the fourth step, and I'm writing some stuff down. And what comes to me, especially the first time through the work, was all the people I had harmed weren't on my resentment list. We'll get that. I had to become willing to make amends to drug dealers, to pimps, to hookers, to murderers, to thieves, to Indian chiefs, whatever it was. It's none of my business yet about who I'm going to, who I'm not going to. I just had to become willing to go to everyone on that list. And if I didn't have the willingness, I'd have prayed till it came. It's interesting, in step 8 and in step 9, they mention each time about willingness to have this spiritual experience, the willingness to go to any lengths. They reminded me twice, don't pause. Don't rest on your laurels. Keep chopping wood and carrying water. So they give me a little fire under my butt to say, remember any lengths, remember any lengths. And once I'm done with the list, I begin to pray. And with some of those folks, I was able to make appointments. And very often when you would call someone, when I would call someone up and look to make an appointment, he says, well, what is it, man? I got you on the phone now. What's shaking? And I had to be prepared right then to do this thing over the phone. This was not on my terms, and certainly not my timing. God's timing is impeccable. God's way is perfect. My way and how I want to orchestrate this is wrong. I want to do the face-to-face. You talk to me. I talk to you. Where I can taste the amends. I can get some satisfaction. And God might say, you're going to get a 2-minute phone call. Here, go. And someone just might throw you out of the office and say, I'm not taking your call. Don't ever call me again. Click. But I've done my part. Book says it's water over the dam. Now, my job is not to go continue doing those harms anymore. If I stole wallets or I stole money, I don't do that anymore. If I go to her because I broke a heart because of infidelity, now I'm sober, I practice fidelity. Or I don't get in a relationship until I'm ready. Shame on me. Claiming God with my lips and my actions prove something else. I'm double-minded. Before I bring something to the altar, before I bring an offering to the altar, I better make sure my business behind me is cleaned up, or don't bring anything at all, because I am now the hypocrite. See, I got to make sure I'm clean. Not perfect, just clean. So I pray, and I remember the first time, I was just talking about this last night, the first time through the work in a neighborhood of 200 direct amends, face-to-face. A neighborhood of 200. My list was ridiculous. My fourth step was long. There was a lot of damage. I didn't know I was going about to embark on this kind of journey. But there I was. And I would wait outside where I used to work on the waterfront. There was a restaurant, a little diner called The Hole in the Wall. There was a bank next door to it. And they tried to break into the bank by putting a hole in a wall in a diner. And they call it The Hole in the Wall. Everything in Brooklyn gets a nickname. And I would wait outside of this place, and the longshoremen and the truck drivers would get there like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's really interesting. I thought they were nuts. These old men get up so early, and I'm 58, and I'm up at 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my God. And I'd wait outside. I'd have money on me, and I'd wait for them to come out. It's like drive-by amends. I'd see Joe, the truck driver, or Frank, the longshoreman, and many of them would, you know, just come right up to me and, what's up, kid? And a bunch of them looked at me and backed up. What? What do you want? I got no money for you today, they would say. I got no money for you today. I said, that's not why I'm here. Can I have a minute of your time? And some of them were gracious, and some of them weren't. I tell them I'm sober now. Not interested. Sometimes I would tell them, sober, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't even know what that was. I have a different life now. I'm living different. Now they're listening. And I stole from you. I borrowed money from you. I never paid you back. Now they're really listening. And it was about $40. I never paid you from 3 years ago. I have $100 to give you because of interest. And maybe I had $150 in my pocket, and I know it was going to be short. But if I start spending money before I pay back the amends, I'm stealing more. I don't go buy a new pair of sneakers where I owe out $500 and spend $150 on sneakers. I'm stealing again. So I did that. And you know something? As I made back financial restitution to these men who came out, somehow I made my rent. There was food in the refrigerator. I had clean clothes, new clothes, construction boots to go to work with, and runners to hang around with. And I was never cold and never hungry. And my rent was paid on time all the time, and I'm giving money away. The universe will respond when we're in God's light. It's unbelievable how this thing works. It's the, I think they call it the paradox. Up is down and down is up. How do you let go? Hold on. How do I hold on? Let go. You know, how do you get money? Give it all away. Right? Make financial restitution, personal relationships get better. Go make personal relationship amends, and somehow I'm a better worker on my job. None of this makes sense. It's the world of the spirit. It's interesting. As we're cleaning up amends, my book says we've entered the world of the spirit. It's this transition into the world of the spirit as I'm cleaning up amends. It's when I stop seeking amends, when I stop doing that work because my belly's full, that I'm headed for trouble. One of my teachers would always say, he always asked me about amends. We'd always talk about amends. How many outstanding amends you have? How many outstanding amends do you have that you're currently aware of? And he would tell folks, if I claim to have a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, and I have a chunk of amends to make that I haven't made, that I could be making without causing harm, I haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of steps 9 and a half, 9 and a quarter, 9 until I felt really comfortable. And my book says I'm headed for trouble if I rest on my laurels. And that's a gut check time. Where am I currently tonight with amends if I'm in this work? How many outstanding amends do I have tonight that I could be making without causing more harm, but I got things to do and I'll get to it? Well, I don't have the money to make it. Well, how about praying for the willingness? God will provide. And I'm sharing with you my own experience. Sometimes the unexpected happens. A lot more than sometimes, where you know you're going to get leveled in this amends, and that person says, oh my God, I have a nephew. He has that thing that you got. Can you take him to a meeting? Case in point, I went to a longshoreman. He was kind of a gangster. And I was a little intimidated. And I was worried, you know, people are going to get the wrong idea that maybe I'm trying to hit him up for money again. And so I made the approach, which is I make the approach. And the amends is when it's completed. And being a guy from the street, he sensed that. And he gave me time. He was a gentleman. He's, how's it going? And we made some small talk. And I'm about to get into, you know, my life has changed and I'm sober now. And he interrupted me and said, I'm hearing good things. Street code for doing, you're doing the right thing. And I told my barman, he wouldn't take the money. And he says, me and your dad go back 100 years. I won't take mine. I'm just glad you're doing good. He's, but what do you do over there? And I start to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous in a general way. He's going to do me a favor. And he pointed me to his nephew, who hung himself in South Florida a bunch of years ago. Kid ran away, came down to South Florida, and hung himself. I never got to him. But I was on my way to get him. Maybe things could have been different. But in going to make this amends that I didn't want to, I was a little reluctant to go because this guy had some what do they call it, cred? Is that what you call it, street cred? Is that the term they use? He was a gangster. I was afraid of him. I had to talk proper, act proper, or else. He put that all aside. Can you help my nephew? And this poor kid hung himself down here somewhere. And I had a lot of experiences like that in making amends. And some of them weren't pretty, and some of them, hey, these longshoremen would say, you go to that cure. Where do you go for the cure? They would call it the cure. And it was always leading me to someone in their family. And our book talks about in step 9, how to approach the man we hated will arise. And I've shared this a million times because we all have, probably all of us, have that one how to approach the man or woman we hated will arise. Whether it's the ex or the boss or just someone. For me, it was a landlord who I despised. And I had the list in front of me and I was reluctant to put his name down. And when I see his name on a list, I can feel myself, you know, just the blood boiling in the top of my head. I am not going to go see this guy unless I can just put his lights out after what he did to me. And I wasn't ready. Which meant there was more work to be done. I still had self-righteous anger. I couldn't go see this guy. In fact, I saw him in a restaurant, and I had to walk out of the restaurant because I was still seething and focused on what he had done to me. I wasn't about to look at what I did to him. And so I was instructed, more inventory, more forgiveness. More inventory, more prayer for forgiveness, and continue to seek God and ask God, please bring me to that place. And the interesting thing about forgiveness, I'm not that big. None of us are that big when we offer forgiveness. Like I offer you forgiveness. God's the only one who can grant forgiveness. What I've done is freed you up and freed me up that we both now can feed off of grace. Because prior to that, when I harbor resentment towards you, I have this ugly thing I'm putting into the universe about you. I'm blocking you and I'm blocking me. And we have two sick people suffering off of one thing. We both get free. And so I was told, pray for forgiveness and write him in turn until I was really clear on what I had done. And lo and behold, chop wood, carry water. And then it hit me. Not a nice guy. He wasn't a nice man. He was rude. He was abrupt. But then I look at what I did to him. Almost burned his house down. Borrowed money, never paid him back. Came in with all sorts of unsavory characters while he had a wife, a daughter, and his wife was expecting. He was working and going to school. He was trying to raise a family, and I'm this juvenile delinquent, this punk renting out his basement apartment and turned it into the Wild West. It was disgusting what I did there. Cursed him out in front of his wife and daughter. Ah, I need to go fix this. And God won't necessarily tell you when he's going to tell you to go, but he will. And one Sunday morning, I got dressed. And God said, now go. And off I went because I had been putting money aside to pay him back, and I had an envelope full of money. And there was a little piece made, says, wow, I'm going to give this whole thing away. Maybe just a little bit I'll hold on to. But I couldn't be free. See that God gauge? And off I went, and I showed up to his door. And they let me in. And we sat down. And I know they were looking at me. This is the same guy. This is completely a different guy. And God will give us the words to speak and the attitude to speak it with. The deportment. Walk softly and carry a big book. I'm not that good. But God is. And I cleaned up that stuff. What can I do to make it right? I think they mumbled, don't move back here anymore. I'm not sure. And then the miracle, the experience, the transformation, the God wink. You know, when God throws the angel dust, boom, right at you and just says, do you doubt me anymore? Oh, ye of little faith, do you doubt me? Because what was about to happen to me, I couldn't plan on my best day like miracles happen. His front door was about 15 steps up. At a basement apartment, you walk up the steps. Paulie knows what I'm talking about. They're all over Brooklyn, right? I don't remember walking down the steps. All I do remember is kind of like walking to my car, but my shoes not touching the concrete. I couldn't feel the concrete. And overwhelmed, I know this sounds kind of hocus pocus, but overwhelmed with surrounded by this light, this yellow-white light, and my ears flooded with tears. Euphoric would be putting it mildly. Just overwhelmed. And I don't know if this was a brief moment or how long it lasted. I have no idea. But I was standing somewhere in the presence of this thing. And I wasn't, here's the interesting thing. I realized it later. I wasn't going, oh my God, I'm having a God experience. I can't wait to get to home group and tell everybody. I was just, there was no thought in this. It was an experience. There was no mind involved. I just, oh my God, euphoric. And I don't remember getting to my car, and I give the gospel truth, and I don't remember the drive home till this day. All I remember is putting the key in the door and coming home. And just, I shed this layer of illness. And when Jesus talks about wear the world like a loose garment, that day, the world, my shoulders were nice and low that day. I had on a loose, comfortable sweatshirt. The world was light. And I realized that God had his eye on me as he has it on us at all times. We just have to show up. We chop wood and carry water, and God says, I got you the whole time. And Bill talks about how dark it is before the dawn. And so these amends kept coming along. And one of them took 17 years into recovery. And I shared last night, one took, I'm sober 29 now. So I want to say in the neighborhood of 25 years to make. I'm off my first list. Because God kept pausing and pausing and pausing and pausing. And sometimes God might say, how sincere are you? How many times are you going to ask me so I know you're sincere? 17 years and about 25 years. And both of them were absolutely accidental. One of them, I was in the treatment center business, and I was working for my sponsor down in Texas, and I was up in living in New Jersey, and I was doing a marketing day. And I was going back to my alma mater, South Oaks Hospital, where I was in treatment 7 times. And I planned on traffic from New Jersey to Amityville, Long Island. It was going to be a long ride, so I left extra early, and there was no traffic, and I got there really early, and I was going to go to a diner or just hang out before I walked in for my scheduled appointment. I was like 2 hours early, and I got out of the truck, and God says, you're going in. I said, I want to go for lunch. No, you're going in. So I grabbed my duffel bag, and I walked in. I look like a fool now, 2 hours early. I look like I have no life. I can't believe I'm walking in, and who's walking out? The gentleman I've been trying to reach for 17 years. And I introduced myself, and he remembered me. He says, I'm not even here today. I just came in to do a couple of things. I'm leaving. The time, 2 minutes early, 2 minutes late, I miss him. And I had the approach, and I told him what I'm doing. And you know how that ended? That conversation ended with a hug. I'm so happy for you, Pete. Because he remembers my AMAs and my disastrous time and treatment. And one was on social media. I get a message. Are you Peter Marinelli from Brooklyn? Yeah. It was an old girlfriend, maybe my first girlfriend ever. I thought you were dead. Which she responded back. I thought you were dead. And I had to explain what happened to me. And I need to make amends to you. You can't drink ever? Oh, I can drink, I told her, but I can't stop. That's the problem. And how this one ended was, oh my God, my husband's alcoholic. Would you be willing to talk to him? I said, I'll get a couple of guys. Wherever, I don't know where you live, but we'll come there if it's local. Well, she was somewhere in New York. And she responded back, my husband almost beat me up last night for telling him he had a drinking problem. We better leave this alone. But her family thought I was dead. She thought I was dead. And that part of her life was settled. Not that I'm that important, but the mystery is gone. I'm clean. So if this woman walked in a room with her husband looking for help, I can be the first one at the door with nothing shadowing me. The freedom. The thing about amends, we have this, we do all this work, and it really hooks up the train to the engine to move into the world of the Spirit. Other than that, it looks good, sounds good, but it isn't going anywhere just yet. And if we really want to take off, we start actively making amends. Except when to do so would injure them or others. And those people that I couldn't go to, God will show me how to make what my sponsor called the indirect amends. For example, personal relationships, some of the women or some of the men, we can't go back to. Will cause more harm, but God will show me how to practice principles in all my affairs to put back into the universe what I stole. Maybe there were some financial things I did, and if I went back to the old employer, I might implicate some people and get them in trouble, or maybe send them to jail. I had no right to save my own skin at someone else's expense, so what do? I stop stealing, could be a good work, and maybe put money back into the universe, and that's what got me on the charity thing, giving money to homeless and stuff like that, and just charitable work. My first few years in AA, I was giving something to this disabled veterans thing. I forget, DAV, I think it's called. And they would send me the envelopes. And then I did it because it's not even an amends anymore. These are men who defended us. So I can walk down the block and not look over my shoulder. And it was a pleasure to send money. I think it was every month. I did that for like 5 years, way overpaid. They wanted 5, 10, or 20. I was working extra money. I put extra money in the envelope. This is going to a good thing now. It's not even about making amends. God changed my heart. And I wasn't doing it saying, hey, sponsor, you know what I'm doing? I tell my homegirl I'm sending this money. It was just right. Like a mama who feeds a baby, she doesn't tell the world, I fed my baby today. It's what you do. It's right. It comes from love. That's how God changed this drunken Dauphine. And there's more work to be done. Very, very often meditation, when I'm praying, when I'm in meditation, I get this thing, there's more work to be done. more work to be done with the men I'm sponsoring and the business I'm in and on me. He's got more work to do with me. And I bleed willingly and joyfully for my God. And he allows me to have people in my life like Marion or Paulie and Karina. They have no business being in my life based on what I've done. But the blessings God gives us and Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I got. Peace.
Let me thank Peter one more time. And now we have Stephanie with our secretary report.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Mark to please read the recovered statement for us. We read this statement to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, my name is Mark, and I am an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940 style big book sponsorship. From forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Could you please stand? If you can, at the end of the meeting, please come to the front. And recovered alcoholic ladies, let's please get this woman back to God. Please join us on Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. Now, this will be Monday across the hall on the third floor. We'll have pizza, soda, and conversations. You're all more than welcome. And we also meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. If you would like to purchase one of our large print Big Books, they are for sale, as well as Big Book dictionaries. In the back of the room, we have a beautiful display. So see you all next week.
I believe next Monday is a holiday, but we are still going to have the Big Book study, just so everybody knows, just like Stephanie said. And anybody who wishes to thank the speaker after we close up, just line up down the center aisle here. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive.
See y'all next week.
The whole world you will be mine. Yes, when you laughing, bah, 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 when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope